What you're about to hear is Enrico Caruso singing, then he said the name to get it right,
Santa Lucia.
Santa Lucia in Neapolitan.
I know. Before you said, what did you say, Lucia?
I said Lucia instead of the... This is like the director's name that I just can't say correctly. I always want to say Sidney Lumet instead of Sidney Lumet. Or,
you've made that mistake.
Yes, I have. No, I'm going to make it again.
Wait, you should know this, though. My daughter's name is Lucia, so you should know this.
Yes, but I see Lucia, and
my other daughter's name, Santa.
So this song is appropriate for both your daughters.
Uh-huh.
Santa and Lucia.
Mm-hmm.
I got that one wrong again. I get self-conscious when I see Lucia because I know I'm going to say it wrong.
You've been around my daughter. You've called her Lucia.
Yes.
So you get it right there.
Yes.
I don't think I realized when you gave her that name that there were all these other pronunciations.
You know what it is? Lucia has a CH sound, but it's spelled with just a C.
Yeah.
I think that's what's screwing me up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like it's the only word in the world where there's a silent letter.
I know it's supposed to be Lucia. I feel bad that we gave her a name where she's going to have to correct people.
Well, maybe she'll change her pronunciation. Do you know Ronald Reagan?
If she did, Reagan? I will disown her. I'd rather she be out on the streets.
But maybe she would just change it to something else entirely.
The betrayal.
She would say, my name is Rainbow now. Please call me Rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter has changed her name 3 or 4 times.
Really?
Always for like an hour. Just like, I like my name to be Evangeline now. Like, okay, sure.
Your name's Evangeline.
Yeah, because I know it's only going to be for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell her, like, well, when you're 18, you can legally change your name to anything you want. And she's happy, and then that's it. That's
you're a much more level-headed father than I am.
Well, it's just experience of knowing that this is not a permanent thing.
Mm-hmm. I think, have you ever raised your voice to your daughters?
Yes, yeah. You can't help that. Eventually, you're going to get upset.
I've never heard you raise your voice ever.
Well,
to your children, how have I known you for 20-something years?
I
have never seen you angry.
I get angry if it's, like, very humid and I'm uncomfortable and there's stuff I have to do.
What if I kick you? I kick you now?
Yeah, but even that I wouldn't get angry because I would feel like you're doing it for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you've ever gotten me angry. And there have been some things that were uncouth.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm sure. But,
yeah.
But you've seen me angry.
Yeah. Yeah, I've definitely seen you angry.
I have a lot more anger than me. Than you did.
Yeah. But I guess I just push my anger down more.
Mm-hmm.
Or I don't think I necessarily manage it better because I still have anger. And I've done things I regret because I was angry. I'm not, like, kidding people angry. But things are like, oh, that affected my life in a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in high school, I had this phone. It didn't work anymore, but I had a hammer, and I always thought it would be like a good exercise to just like smash the phone in anger, but I never really got that angry enough to smash a phone in anger, so I would just smash it out of curiosity, and I was wondering, like, is this anger? No, this isn't anger. I am still smashing a phone, though.
You're either like the most like evolved man I've ever met. Or there's just all this anger sitting in you that will just explode one day.
I don't think I'm evolved. Right next to the phone and the hammer was what looked like a gun.
What?
My dad somehow had an order away kit, and he got a starter pistol.
Mm-hmm.
And a starter pistol looks for all the world like a little revolver, but the barrel is filled in, and like the place where the bullets go is filled in also. You couldn't put a bullet in there if you wanted to.
I had a teacher in high school who was, my history teacher, but he was also the track coach.
Uh-huh.
So he had a starter pistol.
Okay, yeah.
And sometimes in class, as a joke, if you got mad, he would pull the starter pistol out and point it at you.
Ooh.
Yeah, which is not a joke that would go over well these days.
No, but see, I had enough like gun safety and gun knowledge that I never pointed this at anyone. I never pulled the trigger once. I never even put my finger on the trigger because I felt like that's too close.
Mm-hmm.
That's too close to killing someone. But it's not like I didn't have it in my room and look at it all the time. I had the little blasting cap things they would use to fire a pistol. I never put that in.
See, but this is what set you apart from any other like teenager. Like any other teenager would have been out like, I don't know, having fun with that gun.
Yeah. We used it for a student film one time. So I had one person aim it at another person while I was filming. And we never really finished much of the film. It was just them wandering around the neighborhood pointing guns at each other.
Was that the baddest thing you ever did as a kid?
Oh, no. I actually started a fire alarm accidentally.
That's not bad. It was an accident.
Yeah, but the whole class needed to get out. And I started, not just started a fire alarm, I started a fire that prompted the fire.
How'd you do this?
We had a bell tower in our high school. And there was an old-fashioned elevator.
You were talking about guns, bell towers?
Yeah, I sound like I'm hitting all of the all of the words that they're listening for in the NSA when you hear recordings of bad things to talk about. So it was just me and my fertilizer truck. a film class and I were going up to film in the bell tower. And there was an elevator, which we didn't even know there was an elevator in the school. But it was an old-fashioned elevator with, like, the accordion door that opened mm-hmm. and then the second door that closed. Yes. What we didn't realize is you need to open the accordion door and then open the regular door and then close both those doors and then press the button. Because if you leave one door open and one closed and press the button, the elevator can't move. But the winch thing tries to move anyways. So that's what we did, and we thought, oh, the elevator's broken. It wasn't broken, and after a couple of hours, it started to smoke because the engine was overheating.
Yeah.
And that set off the fire alarm, and everyone needed to leave. And they made an announcement about why it had happened, and I realized, oh, that was me.
Did anybody figure out that you were the one who did this?
No. No. And I briefly thought, like, should I mention this? Because I was the one who pushed the button, and, you know, my fingerprint is on it. And they're not going to fingerprint.
Now there would be a camera.
There would be a camera.
You could frame your brother.
Oh, yes, because I'm an identical twin. I could say that it was Sean who did it.
Yeah.
But then he would have the excuse that he was in class the whole time. And he would have all his eyewitnesses.
Mm-hmm.
But I have heard stories about a twin that goes in to rob a bank, and he's very apparent about it. And his brother is at a bar drinking, and then they both say, I'm the one at the bar, and my brother was the one who robbed a bank. And without any way of telling who's telling the truth and who's lying, both brothers go free.
Wow. That's really happened.
I think that happened, like, in the past. Nowadays, I'm sure they could, there'd be some identifying mark, like, you know, a freckle or something. Or they'd leave a fingerprint.
Did you ever consider doing this?
No. But for fiction purposes, it was interesting. If you're a twin and a writer, you're always thinking about writing a book about twins because you're a twin yourself that gives you platform. Mm-hmm. I've never come up with anything to say about being a twin and writing a book about
just twins. Like I could rob this place and have an alibi.
Right. I came up with one idea, and for years I thought this would be a really good idea. And then I heard that Orphan Black was a thing on TV. I was like, oh, well, that was my thing, except, oh, this is so much better than my thing.
No, you like could.
10 times better than my
this
thing.
This would be really... Right, so twins pull this scam,
uh-huh.
But they do it and they frame their triplet.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, again, like a triplet who's kind of the odd man out.
Yeah.
Pin it on him. Meantime, you guys have split the money.
But we've then sold our triplet down the river.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look, here's the thing. If there's triplets, you know there has to be one that's not. It'd be almost impossible for everybody to like each other equally.
Yeah.
There's got to be one triplet who's the odd man out.
Okay, so that would be Gary.
Yeah.
Sean and I had decided that if we ever had a third brother, a third twin, his name would be Gary.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be Gary. On to our sponsor.
Ahoy, ahoy.
Oh, that's right. Welcome to 100 Years Ago Today, the 1917 podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Ryan, and with me, as always, is Vinny Nardiello.
Ahoy, Jeff.
Ahoy, ahoy, ahoy. And we are moving on to our sponsor this week. As promised last week, it is our unsafest product yet. I'm just going to show you a picture of this, and you're going to be aghast. Are you ready?
I'm ready. What? A sleeping porch?
Get a Korf sleeping porch. outdoors, sleeping is a big help in treating any disease, and especially necessary in the case of consumption.
Mm-hmm.
Outdoor sleep plus exercise gives a well person a big surplus of vim, vigor, and vitality. The Korf sleeping porch hangs outside your bedroom window and may be attached to any house. It is thoroughly screened and curtained, giving you all the fresh night air without drafts.
This seems like such a scam to get rid of people with consumption.
Dress in the privacy of your own home. Strong enough to hold a horse. Users are delighted with it. Right for full information, price is reasonable. Korf Manufacturing Company, 1209 Center Street, Lansing, Michigan.
I'd like to think that when they tested this, they used like different animals and just got bigger and bigger animals until they figured out the...
So it fits a horse.
Let's see. Strong enough for a badger. All right, good. Yeah. Okay, let's try. Strong enough for a St. Bernard. All right, we're good here.
And after the horse, like, bring up the cow.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going with horse.
Just horse. Strong enough for a horse. All right, you're off the hook, Hippo.
So this sleeping porch is a screened-in porch with a little drape over top of it. Mm-hmm. And it's being held up by wrought iron that you apply yourself. You, like, screw into the side of your house. Now, I say this is the unsafest thing yet because I believe this is a send-away kit that you put together yourself. You're not hiring people to do it. You're supposed to do it yourself.
Does it hook up to your window? Like, do you go out your window onto the sleeping porch?
Yes, you climb out your window, and there's just a bed outside because it's like a 6x8 receptacle that you're now attaching to the outside of your house.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee that if I tried to put this on, whoever went outside would fall and die. This, like, if you give a cigarette to a 6-year-old, they're going to have bad health concerns. They will not die that day. You would die this day if you
immediately
went outside.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Well, that's what they're saying. It's good for people with, like, tuberculosis, you know?
Yeah. Now,
it's like, you know, you did them a favor. They're going to die sooner or later anyway.
Now, there's also the price that you have to put a bed out there. So the bed is a couple hundred pounds, depending upon how, like, big and wrought irony it is.
I don't think any bed... Well, back then, probably, yeah.
Back then, with the big headboard.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. And then you are going out to sleep on it. And if you have, like, a full-size bed, maybe husband and wife go out to sleep at the same time, and then the whole family dies at once because of the Korf sleeping porch.
People were smaller back then, though. Obesity did not take hold yet, so maybe it could hold more people.
They were smaller, but maybe that just means that the sleeping porch was made smaller.
Yeah, because the only fat people back then were presidents.
They were the only ones who could afford all the food.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy this sleeping porch. I want to see if there are people who actually did this. Like, if you bought a house nowadays, and you'd see, what is that? It's like, oh, we have a Korf sleeping porch. It's mm-hmm. vintage from 1917. I wouldn't go out in it. It's just for decoration purposes. It's where we put plants.
There has to be people who still have these on their houses.
Yeah.
There is.
You would think.
Well, let's look it up. Yeah, we don't have Wi-Fi in your house.
I'm seeing pictures of porches, but not Korf sleeping porches.
No, they didn't want... hold on, no.
You found one?
Yes. You can still get a sleeping porch.
Wow. I did not think this was still a thing.
Mm-hmm. No, they're still around.
I want to see a sleeping
in
porch
fact,
in action.
I found a link here. Bob Vila has a video showing you how to make a sleeping porch.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Maybe for a future episode, we can...
build a sleeping porch and walk outside in it and die.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have actually a special announcement for what our show is going to be next week.
Oh, what's our next week's show?
You're going to have a cigar.
I'm having a cigar? I've never smoked anything.
We've talked about this, that you've never had a cigar in your life. Mm-hmm. This will be a special one.
What's special about this cigar?
Nothing.
You just said it'd be a special one.
A special episode.
Yeah. Oh.
You with a cigar. A
direct object problem.
Yeah.
Why would we be doing this? Is there a special 1917 cigar?
People smoked cigars back then.
Well, yeah, people smoked cigars back then, too. They cut off their feet, but we're not going to cut off our feet.
I will. Hold on. All right, I got an idea.
Okay.
All right, there's a cigar style called the Churchill.
Uh-huh.
Churchill was alive in 1917.
He was.
Yeah. That's how we'll tie it in.
That's how you're going to tie it in?
Yeah.
Okay.
So are you excited about this?
I'm very worried about this. I feel peer pressure. More peer pressure than I would standing on a Corf sleeping porch. Okay, on to our week.
Tune in, people. Jeff Ryan.
Tune in next week.
Smoking his first ever cigar.
We have to talk about...
Is there anything else you've never done?
Hmm?
You've had alcohol, obviously.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's a wide variety of things I've never done.
All right, what if you take, like, a half bottle of, like, Percocet and then have a cigar? Yeah, so you get your first opiates in there as well.
So I start accidentally eating a cigar, thinking, this is a delicious caterpillar. It's so nice. Okay, finally, onto the week. There is bad news coming from London. This is the first and the worst of the London blitzes of World War I. 162 people dead, 432 wounded. German planes came over and dropped bombs. And this is one of the reasons why Britain was so good in World War II during the Blitz, because they had terrible experience with it. They knew what it was like. They knew how to cope with it, both in how to black out their windows and also how to deal with the loss of hundreds of people in a night.
Like, no big deal with them.
Right.
Well, they're not an emotional people, so they're...
Yeah.
You know.
But this is like where the stiff upper lip comes from.
Yeah, this is the carry on. They're dead.
Also this week, General Pershing, who a couple of weeks ago left America to go to Paris, arrives in Paris. This is something that I still have a hard time, like, fathoming, that there weren't really commercial airplanes.
Yeah, so it took you a while to get there.
Yeah, it took 2 weeks if you wanted to make a crossing. And it would be, you were, like, crossing in style. Mm-hmm. Even back then, you probably had private berths, and they were, like, you know, 6 meals a day. You're eating the finest turtles and aspic and celery consomme on the side. All of our favorite 1917 foods. But Pershing has arrived, so World War I, like, ratchets up yet another notch as America begins to get more and more involved. This is also the week that Greece's King Constantine I abducts the kingdom of Greece. And his son, Alexander, takes over. Alexander is going to lead Greece into World War I. The father is trying to stay away, but he just wasn't able to forever.
I had no idea that Greece was in World War I. I didn't know this. You don't hear about Greece's involvement in any way.
No.
No. The wonderful Grecian army.
You hear about Greece in World War II.
Right, or the Trojan War, but right. Not like...
But it's like Greece's time is done. It's like when you think about Persia and like, oh no, Persia is still a real place. It's still Iran. They're still involved in all this stuff. But how weird is it if you had an empire and its time was done, but you're still around? And like the next 2,000 years are just like, and I guess they're still around doing stuff.
Yeah, there was that, you know, the wedding movie, but that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah, like imagine what Italy would be like if the last thing you remembered was, oh, and then the Roman Empire fell, and I guess there's still Italians? I guess? I don't know.
I know they're Greeks, but they're incidental people. They're not...
So, there's one more big story going on this week, which is that the Secret Service, which was protecting President Wilson, decided to expand its capabilities. It is now offering to protection for President Wilson's family as well. So wherever he goes, he has a Secret Service detail, but now the Secret Service detail extends to his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And from then on, the Secret Service would be covering multiple people, all of the important people in government and their families, which can be a pain, as I heard from a West Wing episode.
Who says you don't do research?
I'm remembering this because C.J. Craig got promoted, and in the promotion, she got a Secret Service detail. But what it meant was that there would always be like 4 guys in her apartment at any given time, and they needed a place to sleep. So they needed to, she only had like a 1-bedroom place, so she couldn't sleep in her bedroom anymore because the Secret Service was going to be there. So she needed to sleep on her couch. and they had all this equipment and was going to take a huge amount of energy, but she needed to pay the energy bill. So it was like it was a big inconvenience in her life if she ever wanted to have people over or have a life outside of government. But because she was a regular person who had an important job, that was part of it.
Mm-hmm. But I think most of our episodes should just be like us discussing old West Wing.
It would really class up the place. Mm-hmm. It would be what I hoped this would be every single week. Our big story this week is about the Pulitzer Prize. 100 years ago today, the Pulitzer Prizes were first given out. Pulitzer?
Pulitzer.
Okay.
We talked about this, didn't we?
Yes, but my brain is wired in such a way that I'll get the wrong pronunciation in, and I know it's the wrong pronunciation.
Like Lucia and Lucia.
Right, like Lucia.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll know the pronunciation is wrong, but then there'll be a toggle switch where I can't remember which one is wrong and which one is right. I just remember
that one of them is wrong.
That one of them is wrong, and I'll never be able to pick.
Let's figure out a way to get you to always remember. Because I said you and I had the same journalism professor. And
yeah,
I remember he would yell at people for this.
Yeah. And so I've already forgotten.
All right. So Pulitzer is the right way. So let's figure out pull.
Pull.
Pull. Okay. What journalism thing with pull can be like a reminder?
Push notifications and pull notifications in modern journalism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a push notification would be if the New York Times published a story that's important to your interest. A pull would be you going to the New York Times to learn about that
story. Sure. And would it be called a pull or, you know?
Right. It would be called a Pulitzer. And I just wrote the word pull down.
Or push.
Yeah.
All right. So now you're never going to...
No. And now...
I'm going to hold you this. We'll talk about Pulitzer next week.
And right next and to pull, right. I wrote Lush to remind me that it's pronounced Lucia.
It's not Lucia. Luch.
Luch.
Like Susan Lucci. Lucia. It shouldn't be that hard.
No, it shouldn't be. But I'm the sort of person, if I'm stuck at the intersection, I don't know whether to make a left or a right, I will make the same left 20 times in a row. Every single time I go there, instead of learning, oh, this is the way to make the right.
I was going to tell her to start calling you Uncle Jeff, and now I'm taking that away from you.
Taking that away?
Yeah. Until you can learn. Say your name right.
I have a toy for her in the basement. I'll remember it. I'll get it.
Really?
Yes. It's 1917 specific.
Is it like a metal toy of some type?
It's actually a sleeping porch. It's a baby sleeping porch.
You know, I gotta say, my kids are young. I wouldn't mind putting them out on a sleeping porch.
They would probably love it.
Well, they're light, so it would probably hold them. And yep. If it doesn't, you know.
You're young. You can make more.
Yes.
Yep. Or you can go to Atlantic City. They're just toddlers for free.
Grab them.
So, Joseph
Pulitzer. I hope somebody's listening to this episode without listening to last week and has no idea what that meant. Like,
I think they're talking about stealing toddlers. So, Joseph Pulitzer was running two big newspapers during the World War I days. And back then, that brought you a whole lot of money. He was basically a tycoon, a mogul. And he decided he wanted to do something with his money to, like, the way that all of the great robber barons did.
Mm-hmm.
They would make millions of dollars, they'd enslave nations, and then they'd donate it to charity on their deathbed.
That was, like, the Depression era idea when, like, they'd run around, like, throwing money out of cars to people.
Please don't hate me and my offspring.
Yeah, I think Rockefeller would do that, right? When he just like run out throwing silver dollars at people.
Rockefeller was actually a good guy, I heard, but he was a sort of good guy where every good thing he tried to do went terribly wrong.
Like he killed people with the silver dollars and just pelting them when they're unaware.
But it would be like trying to start a new town in Brazil in terms of, oh, that may seem like a good idea, or you've probably killed a couple of thousand people to get that land. So, Pulitzer decided that he was going to start a series of awards for excellence in journalism. And the very first year, he gave out 4 Pulitzers. Did I get that right?
You said it.
I did. I said it correctly.
You said Pulitzer.
Okay.
You get to be Uncle Jeff again.
So, the 4 Pulitzer Prize winners in 1917, one person wrote an article about the first anniversary of the sinking of the Lusitania.
Mm-hmm.
One person wrote an essay called Inside the German Empire to let you know what it was like to be in the Weimar Republic back then. One person wrote a biography of Julia Ward Howe. I had to look up who she was, but she wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic. And a fourth person was J.J. Jusserand, who was...
Chabadou.
He was the French ambassador to America, and he was like a man of letters who wrote lots of stuff in French and lots of stuff in English. He wrote one book, which was like his Democracy in America, called With Americans of Past and Present Days. And that got a Pulitzer Prize. Now, interestingly, he was French. And you think of the Pulitzer as something that only Americans win. But I guess back then, it was anyone who was writing about America.
Mm-hmm.
But now I think it's changed. So if you're Canadian, you're not able to win the Pulitzer Prize. There was
if you're writing for an American newspaper?
Ooh, that's a good question. Is it like a citizenship thing?
No, it's probably, it can't be, right?
Right. I mean, I've heard the joke that that Margaret Atwood has won every award in the world save the Pulitzer Prize because she's Canadian, and that's like the one prize she's not able to win.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's actually a joke or not, if there's a way that if she decided to write a book on American history that she'd be grandfathered in. So, the Pulitzer Prize is administered by Columbia University. There's this group of three or four people, and I think they change every year. They look at all of the great works that was made in literature and writing and journalism every year, and they shortlist three or four pieces of each. And the shortlist, like, gets... I don't know if they officially announce it or if it just kind of gets, like, whispered, so you know who's on the shortlist. And then one of those shortlist items gets picked. And there's a lot of, like, thumb-on-the-scale stuff.
Did you think they... did you have dreams? Because you were a journalism major. Like, did you have dreams of winning a Pulitzer?
No, but I looked this up. It is a worthwhile dream to try to win a Pulitzer.
Of course.
Because, not... I mean, you can... If you're an actor, you could dream about winning an Academy Award, but those are rare. If you're a man, there's two chances to win every year for, you know, best actor and best supporting actor. That's it. If you're a woman, same thing. But there are like a dozen Pulitzers given out every year to all different sorts of reporting. If you're part of a team of reporters, everyone on the team wins a Pulitzer.
Yeah.
So you can definitely get it. It's just being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
I'm pulling for your Disney book, Lee.
I don't think it's going to win. But did you know someone from our student newspaper, The Signal, won a Pulitzer last year?
Really?
Yes.
He's more successful than us? Fuck him.
He had the unfortunate duty of being one of the reporters on duty during a San Bernardino shooting. And so he coordinated with other reporters, and he was publishing stuff as fast as he could, talking to the police, talking with other reporters, talking to the witnesses and the families of the victims. And, like, you know, the day before, he was just doing the regular boring journalism job that no one cares about.
Who was this?
I don't remember his name, but I read an article where he talked about how what he was doing didn't seem super, I don't want to say that it seemed super hard, but it's like there was a job to do, and some days there's a lot to do, and some days there's not much.
Mm-hmm.
This was just a day where there was a whole lot to do, and everyone was paying attention to him. So he was aware, like, what I'm doing isn't hugely different than what I'm doing other days. It's just the pressure to not screw up.
And get it right.
And get it right, yeah. And to keep getting it right, not to buckle down and start reporting rumors because you just feel like you need to feed the beast.
What is the physical Pulitzer Prize? Is it a trophy? Is it a medal?
It's a medal. It's a gold medal that's worth $500.
And people, you can wear it around your neck?
I think you can. I think they give you an award with a little sash around it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you win the Pulitzer Prize for fiction or nonfiction, you get $15,000.
All right.
Now, $15,000 doesn't sound like that much. If you win the Nobel Prize, you get like $1 million+.
Well, I mean, for $15,000, that might make you one of the most highly paid journalists in print now.
I was thinking, like, every year whoever wins a Pulitzer Prize in poetry, there's no way they got an advance on that book. That's the only money they've ever seen from that book. The only reason anyone's getting published in poetry is that they're hoping for that sweet, sweet 15K. 35 years of work, and it's all going to pay off. This is enough money to buy 2 plane tickets anywhere in the world. In economy.
We're not getting drinks.
Don't watch a movie. It's $8. I need to win a second Pulitzer if you want to watch a movie.
All right, I'm going to write one more poem. Maybe this year, no layover in St. Louis.
Oh, I'm getting really inspired. Honey, you can order the Wi-Fi. I don't know how they haven't run out of money yet. Because Pulitzer gave $2 million to Columbia to establish like a trust or an endowment, or however it worked. And they would take some of that money out every year, like, you know, the dividend, and they give it as an award. And maybe because they've only increased the amount of the award a little bit, maybe there's still so much money in there and it's accruing. Well,
it's probably been, like, invested or in somewhere, right?
Yeah. And maybe Columbia is chipping in, too. I mean, there's that university itself has a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And maybe the Pulitzer family kept giving it in. And maybe when you win a Pulitzer, you start getting letters every year saying, so, you won a Pulitzer 7 years ago. Wouldn't you like to give back? A check for $5 would really help us out.
If you won the Pulitzer, would you wear your medal around?
I think I'd
maybe
to a party.
Around the house.
No, not around the house. But
I know the cool movies, like, I don't really care. But, like, I think I'd put it on occasionally.
like a suit to see if it still fits?
Yeah, throw it on, wear it around, you know.
I don't think it'd be comfortable. I think it would hang around your neck a lot. I'm sure it's just gold-plated. It's not solid gold.
Mm-hmm.
Because even the lowest Pulitzer is, like, $500. And that's not a cash prize. It's just, like, the medal is worth $500. And I don't think $500 of gold is that much. So I think it's probably just a big hunk of lead that they coated in gold. And because it's a Pulitzer, they can say it's
actually chocolate inside.
That'd be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Where's your Pulitzer? I hate it.
A poet's got to eat, man.
We're going to switch over briefly to talking about our Nickelodeon. In the history of the Pulitzers, which is now 100 years, there have only been 3 stories that have been filmed of everything that is fiction and nonfiction that has won the Pulitzer. I was kind of amazed at that. I thought it'd be a lot more.
More than that, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess there's a difference between, like, good and popular. The Pulitzers are all good. So it's hard to film something that's good and literary, because oftentimes what makes it good is that it's not just, like, a screenplay that someone wrote down and decided you could read it.
Mm-hmm.
So the film I picked was Ironweed, which is a movie I have not seen.
Me neither, but I've heard of.
Do you know what it's about?
No.
It's a Great Depression story. Jack Nicholson plays a hobo, and he comes back to his hometown of Albany, and he meets up with the lady he used to like, Meryl Streep. So, I have to imagine with Jack Nicholson and Meryl Streep that it's a pretty good movie.
You know, we really should, like, before doing it, going, maybe watch these movies, just for your comment on them a little more. Instead, I think I remember this being a Blockbuster in 1988.
Well, I like the idea of it just being a recommendation. We don't need to go super in-depth on it. Some weeks we will, but other weeks we won't. Unless you really want us to pause this podcast for, like, 2 hours so we can watch Ironweed.
All right, let's discuss other Jack Nicholson movies then. How about the one where he's a wolf?
I think that's called The Wolf That Couldn't Slow Down. I have a quiz for you about the Pulitzer Prize.
All right, good, good.
Okay.
I was hoping you would.
Yes.
I've been catching up to a pattern with the show. There's usually a quiz.
Yes. So, I thought about doing the quiz first, but I thought, no, I'll keep it at the end. And I hope we just won't cover the same ground. And it turned out we didn't. So this is a quiz about Pulitzer trivia, Pulitzer controversies, things like that.
Okay.
Okay. What's the only graphic novel to win a Pulitzer Prize?
Watchmen.
Nope. It's Mouse by Art Spiegelman.
Oh, I've read that.
Yeah. It won a special Pulitzer Prize.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, Watchmen wouldn't win.
No, Watchmen wouldn't win.
No.
No. No. Nothing with comic books would win. However, The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay did win.
Yes.
Which was a novel about comic book creators, not about
comics. And I've read it.
Yeah, that's very good.
Yes. Is that next? Fire no. Quiet. All right. I got it right.
Okay. Have any Pulitzer Prizes been revoked?
Yes.
Yes, there was one in the 1980s. There's a reporter named Janet Cook. She falsified her resume to say that she graduated from a prestigious college, and then she started to write, and she wrote this very harrowing story about an 8-year-old boy who was addicted to heroin, and she described him shooting up in great detail, and it ends with his death.
But this boy was fake.
Was made up, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was an investigation to find out where this boy was, who his parents were, and it eventually came out that that it was fake.
Can they just go, all right, in that case, revoked. You win the award for fiction.
Someone actually said that they should have taken away her Pulitzer Prize for fiction, or for nonfiction, but given her a Pulitzer Prize for fiction.
Yeah, the story's still good, right?
Right. And there was a heroin epidemic in the 80s, and she made up that story to illustrate it. Mm-hmm. But she also made it up because it was just, you know, the exaggeration to show how terrible the example was. Okay, Ernest Hemingway won a Pulitzer Prize in 1953 for The Old Man and the Sea, which I'm sure you've read.
Yes.
Yes. It's only 100 pages long. It's not...
That is the summer reading everybody picks when you're in high school.
Yes. I actually read that in college. I went to Barnes & Noble. I sat down. I read it in one sitting because I didn't want to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it back on the shelf, and then I left. And I thought that was my assignment for that week because I was taking a Hemingway course, and it was not. I got the book wrong, and I went in. I was totally unprepared.
Mm-hmm.
But I was prepared for 3 weeks later when we did have to do Old Man.
Did you keep, like, I picture you, like, trying to redirect the conversation to be about Old Man and the Sea. Yeah.
So, Hemingway was going to win in 1941 for another book. It was shortlisted, and then it was going to be it. But the Columbia judges were very persnickety about language. They didn't like cursing. They didn't like graphic content. And Hemingway put sex scenes in his book. So that made it ineligible, even though it was the one that was going to win.
All right.
So, what is the name of that 1941 novel that should have won a Pulitzer?
Excuse me, sorry. Sun Also Rises.
For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Okay.
Only 9 musicals have won the Pulitzer for drama. Most recently, Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
You probably would have guessed that one.
Yeah.
But name any of the other 8 Pulitzers for drama that have been musicals.
Let me think. Let's see.
I'll give you a couple of chances. You can just start naming musicals at random.
I'm sure this has to be something like serious, right?
Right.
Hmm.
Not necessarily like deadly dull serious.
West Side Story.
No, but you would think. You would definitely think.
Yes, about gang violence.
Yeah, and there's a lot of musicals on here that are nowhere as good as West Side Story.
Cats. Did Cats win this?
Yes, Cats won.
Mm-hmm.
Cats won 5 years in a row.
All right, let's move on.
Okay, so the 8 are Chorus Line, Rent,
all right.
Of Thee I Sing.
Rent sucks. Can we just admit that now? Do we still keep pretending Rent's good?
The guy who made it died the day it opened.
I know, but
they weren't able to make any changes.
I know, it's awful. It's, like, I'm sorry. Pay your fucking rent. Like, am I supposed to root for them? I don't get it.
I think the older you get, the more you realize, like, wait, they were living for free?
Yeah, and they're like, mad about this because he suddenly wants, like, money for the place that he owns?
And your song sucks.
Yeah.
You're living for free and your song sucks?
No, I maybe I'm biased because I am a landlord.
Mm-hmm.
Slumlord, actually. Which made me, you know, but no,
I'm imagining you every month just standing outside singing the songs from Rent. You're going to pay my rent.
No, but are they supposed to be the good? Like, who would ever find these people to be likable and good? I don't understand.
There is a fan theory that they are actually terrible artists who have all been deluding themselves into thinking that they're great artists.
I think
and that the hero of the story is the guy who wants to charge them rent and make them face the fact that they have to live in the real world.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah.
Good for that guy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, which I know, and in all fairness, that's somebody should have done that to the guy who died that. That wrote the musical to begin with. It's not good.
So, Chorus Line and Rent were...
I want to revoke his Pulitzer.
That's something else about Pulitzer Prizes, which we're going to touch on.
Give it to whoever wrote West Side Story.
You have to be alive to get it.
Mm-hmm.
With some exceptions. So, Chorus Line.
So, who got his award then?
Of The Icing. He's co-writer.
Oh.
South Pacific won. Sunday in the Park with George won. Fiorello won. It's so weird that we made a musical about a New York City mayor. How to Succeed.
And why wasn't it Ed Koch? Really
trying. There should have been an Ed Koch musical. Would it be called How Am I Doing?
Yes.
It would?
What else would you call it?
Yeah. It could be called Koch.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Either Koch or How Am I Doing.
Yeah.
All right. They'll call it Koch. How Am I Doing is the song, the big song before intermission.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the...
That's the showstopper right there, yeah.
And the last one was called Next to Normal, about bipolar disorder. And that brings us to our next question. Next to Normal won the Pulitzer Prize in 2010. Why was it such a controversial win for Best Drama?
I don't know.
It was not shortlisted. They released what the three or four plays that were shortlisted were, and Next to Normal was not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And this wasn't necessarily because it was bad, it's because it had closed. They wanted to give the award to a play that was still on Broadway.
Okay.
But they decided this was so good that it would supersede all the ones that they said were shortlisted.
Now, after it won, did they bring it back?
I don't know if they brought it back. It'd be interesting if they did. That would probably be a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it takes so long to mount something on Broadway. You need to get the cast ready, and you need to find a theater. I don't think they'd be able to bring it back. David McCullough has won 2 Pulitzer Prizes for biography. There's a whole separate biography category. Which 2 presidents did David McCullough write about to win his Pulitzers?
John Adams.
Yes.
And Teddy Roosevelt.
Close. They were both made into HBO movies. So it was a John Adams miniseries.
And
the other one got turned into a movie starring Gary Sinise.
Who did Gary Sinise play? Let's see. Walter White was LBJ. I don't remember this.
Truman. He played Truman. Okay, this may be an obscure one, but I'm hoping you get it right. Okay, this academic won the History Pulitzer Prize. There are History Pulitzer Prizes as well that are separate from biography or nonfiction. So there's so many ways of winning a Pulitzer every year.
You might win this one. You might win for Mickey.
Just because no one else has...
Yeah.
Yeah, every other book has won some award. There's only one history book that was written. Oh. So I guess we got to give it to this guy.
Yeah.
So... This academic won in 1993 for his book about the American Revolution. His name gets yelled in a Southie accent by Matt Damon and Good Will Hunting. Please name this academic.
Let's see.
Private joke among me and some of my friends. I guess not you, otherwise you'd be yelling it out
right now. I'm trying to think who they mentioned in what movie?
In Good Will Hunting.
Zinn?
Gordon Wood! Gordon Wood.
Did they? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think they talked about Zinn in that, too.
They may have mentioned Howard Zinn, yeah. But that movie is 20 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Is it an inside joke with you and your friends?
I guess it's been an inside joke for 20 years now. Whenever any of us sees Gordon Wood, we just point it out.
Who's Gordon Wood? Who's this group of friends? This is not my group of friends that I'm with you. It's a different group.
No. I have multiple friends.
I know.
I'm allowed to have other friends.
I have other friends, too. Yeah. But, you know, I don't like you bringing up the inside jokes that you guys have. I'm picturing, like, you'd invite me over and they're here and you're all throwing that around and I can't, you know, I can't offer anything.
I apologize.
Yeah.
But what if I made it up to you? Next time I was with them, I would bring an inside joke with you and I.
That's good.
Yeah,
please do.
Yeah. All right. I'll bring up Mad Magazine in the 80s.
Yes.
And be like, wait, what are you talking about?
Hey, Drew, I was reading. Mad Magazine might be folding.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean like folding like an Al Jaffe folder? Al Jaffe folding.
That's what I'm hearing. No, they're you know, I think they're actually, I heard they're closing headquarters.
They could be.
And moving elsewhere.
Yeah, so many people are getting all of their news and entertainment online that I can definitely see people not buying it
anymore. Who knew Cracked was going to win?
Yeah.
The Mad Cracked War would be won by Cracked.
It's like RC Cola winning the Cola
Wars. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just not supposed to happen. So, in this decade, the persnickety Pulitzer Committee decided 3 separate times not to give out an award for fiction. So they got their short list of books.
Yes.
And instead of picking one, and I said, you know what? They all suck. No award this year. No one has done anything of consequence. Mm-hmm. And they did it three times in what decade?
This was done, let's see, I'm trying to think. 70s.
Yes, 70s. In 1971, 1974, and in 1977. They're like, we give up. Nothing's good. The world sucks.
70s was a good time for film.
Yeah.
Apparently horrible for books.
But there were good books that were coming out at that time. There's no reason for that.
No, we should do. Okay? And this would have taken some research on your part. Maybe next week. We should find out those three books that were not on the short list and figure out which one we would give it to.
I did look up for one of the years. In 1974, Roots was one of the books, and it got a special Pulitzer Prize, but it didn't get the Pulitzer Prize in regular fiction. And then there was controversy because the author, Alex Haley, had borrowed from another book called The Africans, and he needed to pay a whole bunch of money to that guy. So it brought a lot of publicity to him, but not necessarily good publicity, mm-hmm. because I guess he had been more than a little inspired by other books when he was writing his own. What type of cartoons are given Pulitzer Prizes?
Editorial cartoons.
Yes, right? Editorial cartoons. Yeah. I was going to give you a choice of children's books or memoirs or editorial cartoons, but you got it without the choices.
Mm-hmm.
In 1999, what type of work began to be eligible for Pulitzers? They added additional categories.
I'm guessing some kind of like online journalism.
Online journalism, yep. Mm-hmm. And BuzzFeed actually has won a Pulitzer in the last couple of years.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Huffington Post won it a couple of years ago.
Oh, well, that makes more sense than BuzzFeed.
But BuzzFeed has hired real reporters now, and it's so weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's so weird. Because it's like actual journalism, not just listicle stuff. Because I guess they're big enough that they can afford to hire real reporters and give them time.
You know what's funny is, I didn't even know this because I kind of was like, I don't want to go anywhere near BuzzFeed.
Yeah, if you see BuzzFeed, you don't need to click on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I didn't even know they had like real journalism now.
14 dogs look like Patrick Stewart. Yeah. Plus a scathing expose into the State Department. And finally, I went through the list of all of the fiction books, the biographies, the histories, and the nonfictions over the last 40 years. How many of the Pulitzer-winning books do you think I have read? Now, our over-under is 25. So, out of, like, the 80 books that had won Pulitzers in those four categories, how many do you think I've read? More or less than 25?
I'm thinking you've read more.
I did read more. I've read 37 of them.
I know, because if this didn't involve you bragging a little bit, you wouldn't even come up with the question.
The bragging mostly came from the over-under.
Yeah.
From setting the over-under so that I was on the oversight. But I was curious because I hadn't read any of the poetry books, so I guess you could have counted poetry in there.
Because you agree, poetry sucks.
Maybe it doesn't suck. Maybe we just have only read the poetry that sucks.
Mm-hmm. You know who says poetry sucks, right? Ray Bradbury said it when he came to spook at our college.
Oh.
And I remember him going, at one point just going, let's just say right now, there's no good poetry being written. There's no good poetry at all. And like everyone like applauded, like, yeah, you're right. You're Ray Bradbury, so you know, there's no good poetry.
I think it was right after that he said, why do I need a computer? There were some things he was a little behind the times on. And I don't think he was...
Were you at that? Did you go to see him speak?
Yeah, I was there.
So you remember this. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my brother has lots of fond stories about how he asked Ray Bradbury a question about dandelion wine, and Ray Bradbury responded, and then Ray Bradbury initiated the handshake.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
You remember our friend Jay Black, comedian Jay Black?
Yeah.
He wound up getting into a fight with Kurt Vonnegut the year before.
He did?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't... If I heard about this, I forgot about it.
He made some... Apparently Kurt Vonnegut was drunk.
Okay, not surprising.
And Jay was entrusted with, taking care of him.
That is surprising.
And I don't know how, and he made some like a remark about gang warfare, and Kurt Vonnegut was very offended by this because it's nothing to joke about. Never proved that Kurt Vonnegut, a man whose work features drawings of assholes.
He drew a picture of Jay Black, really? And with that private joke, we end this week in 100 years ago today. Join us next week when we will be talking about how the British family is going to change their name.
All right, I can't wait.
Okay, until next time.
And you're going to have a cigar.
Until next time, ahoy hoy.
Ahoy hoy.